You're in the middle of nowhere, with the day fading to a pale band on the horizon. From the descending dark, a bus pulls up, brightly lit inside, but with no name, no destination. The door shuttles open before you. There is no driver. Do you climb aboard? Of course you do. It's why you're here. Welcome to the Gray Line.
Welcome aboard, constant traveler. I do hope you've packed a toothbrush and an overnight bag, because today's destination will take us on a three-day layover in Augusta, Georgia, circa the summer of 1986. A time before cell phones and the internet, when ancient myths still commanded a tenuous alliance with the modern age. And there is no more modern man, by 1986 standards, than your fellow passenger, that skinny older man seated across the aisle with his thinning black hair and heavy glasses. His name is Amos Pearl, and you shouldn't blame him for looking a bit furtive. He's used his own fondness for technology to spy on things that no mortal eye was meant to see. Mr. Pearl is soon to learn that, unlike videotapes, there is no rewind on human memory, and the late fees can only be paid in blood at the eternal night drop of the Gray Line.
All right, so here's the thing about vampires. Everything you know about them is correct, but completely wrong. Honestly, that's probably true about most people, if you think about it. Things with other people are always way more gray and complicated than most of us want to believe. But let's stick with us creatures of the night for the moment. According to all the stories, vampires get burned up by sunlight, right? Well, that's a true fact. But the sun's out right now, and here I am. You saw me come walking in from broad daylight. Nobody's on fire, so clearly sunlight is just a metaphor for something else, right? But hold on, we'll come back to that in a minute. Let's start off with some basic facts. Fact 1. Vampires have to be invited in before they can attack. Now that one is 100% true, actually. Call it the legal fine print attached to our powers. A vampire can easily bewitch and overpower any human it wants. Turn him into a blood buffet, no problem. But, and it's a big but, the human has to invite the vampire in before he can do it. Now, that's a pretty big catch-22, right? The thing is, like any legal fine print, there are always loopholes. There's a million ways to get a victim to throw open the doors. Vampires are great charmers. We can alter our appearance in lots of ways. We can mimic other people's voices. We can seem completely harmless and familiar. So yeah, getting invited in, not much of a problem, usually. It's just a matter of knowing which buttons to push.
Detective Renee Villefort knew the impression that most people had when they sat down at her desk. On TV shows like Miami Vice or TJ Hooker, when a police detective questioned a suspect, it was done in a dedicated room, one usually composed of plain cinder block walls with a metal table in the center and a one-way mirror conspicuously installed behind the interrogator. The Augusta Police Department did have detainee rooms, but they were reserved for the murder suspects and drug lords, which were surprisingly rare. Not that Augusta didn't have plenty of both, they just didn't often end up conveniently seated behind those metal tables, waiting for the old good cop, bad cop routine. The last time Renee had been in any of the detainee interrogation rooms, it had been for cupcakes and styrofoam cups of black coffee when Hal Tidbaum, the head dispatcher, had celebrated his 30th year on the force. If Miami Vice's Sonny Crockett were ever to visit the Augusta, Georgia police station, he wouldn't know where to hang his pastel sport coat. On TV, the police detainee was never questioned at the detective's desk. And if they were, the detective's desk was never situated in the center of a busy bullpen surrounded by other desks and the anticlimactically chattering voices of other detainees and detectives. On a nearby wall, President Reagan looked on serenely from his portrait as a wiry man with a balding black pate and thick black spectacles was led to Renee's desk by the duty officer. The man leaned a fat book against her desk and sat down, but only after adjusting the molded plastic chair in a fussy manner that Renee thought probably defined the man's entire life. He was wearing a paisley printed vest over a threadbare collared shirt buttoned up to the throat, pale blue, with prominent stains around the ring of the collar. She opened the folder on her desk, consulted it briefly, and then looked up at the man. He glared back at her, his eyes magnified behind heavy glasses. Renee said,
"Can you state your name for the record, sir?"
"Amos Gregory Pearl."
Quick and succinct, a little impatient.
"You are aware, Mr. Pearl,"
Renee plowed on perfunctorily,
"that in response to a complaint lodged by a Miss Demetria White, your establishment, the Plaza Inn and Suites, was found to contain an undisclosed surveillance camera in the number 11 efficiency suite, which was at that time occupied by the aforementioned Miss White and her two children."
Pearl's eyes twitched, but didn't exactly look away.
"The camera doesn't work."
"You mean the camera isn't currently in operation?"
"Meaning, I never used it during her time renting number 11.
"But the camera is, in fact, functional?"
Renee regarded him stonily.
"Even if it was, the last thing anyone would want to look at is her and her two overweight little rugrats. I'm no pedophile."
Renee sighed and consulted the folder on her desk again.
"And you are also aware that upon further investigation, additional cameras were discovered in 16 other rooms, including 7 bathrooms and 9 sleeping areas. Is that correct, sir?"
Pearl shifted in the plastic chair and turned his attention to a distant window.
"None of them are in operation. You guys can check stuff like that, can't they?"
Renee didn't need to consult the folder to confirm this.
"The department technician determined that all of the cameras feed to your living quarters, to a single control deck, something called a switcher, which connects to a television and a VCR. But you know that, of course."
"It's all just for security,"
Pearl said, returning his gaze to her in a manner that was hard not to read as challenging.
"You know where the plaza is. I don't rent by the hour, but I might as well. Not a whole lot of happy families coming through my doors on their way to Disney World, you know? What do I get instead? I get hookers and addicts and gangbangers, all of them either sleeping it off or turning tricks or cutting deals. They tear up my rooms, leave ungodly messes. They vandalize and steal everything that isn't bolted down. They steal my towels, my pillows. Can you believe one of them even tried to waltz out with a TV stuffed in a Samsonite trunk?"
"And yet you haven't reported any of that, sir. No calls to the police, no surveillance camera footage turned over for evidence. Why is that, Mr. Pearl?"
"I told you, I don't use the cameras anymore."
Renee consulted the folder again.
"When did you stop using them?"
19 months ago."
"That's a very specific time frame, almost like you've been keeping track. What made you stop?"
For the first time, Pearl seemed to hedge. He looked away again, drummed his fingers on his knees.
"I saw something I didn't want to see."
Renee observed him intently.
"Something that should have been reported to the Augusta PD?"
Still looking away, he shook his head curtly.
"Because it would have required telling us about your illegal cameras?"
He glanced back at her.
"Because it's not the sort of thing somebody calls the cops about."
Renee sighed and flipped a page in the folder.
"Mr. Pearl, you are aware that according to OCGA code 161166, that it is illegal in the state of Georgia to record any person without their express given consent?"
Pearl shook his head, expressionless. Renee observed this with an inner eye roll.
"Fortunately for you, existence of the cameras alone does not constitute a violation, but any recorded material will subject you to state and civil penalties. Do you consent to a search of your property at 1404 Walton Way for evidence of illegally recorded content and material?"
He nodded.
"Sure."
"But we won't find any, will we?"
He shook his head and studied the fingernails of his right hand.
"Nope."
"You're especially lucky that your cameras weren't equipped with any audio transmitting capabilities, Mr. Pearl,"
Renee said, closing the folder and slotting it into a rack on the corner of her desk.
That would have turned this into a federal wiretapping case, and you would have been somebody else's problem entirely. As it stands, should any recorded material be recovered from your residence, you will be liable to lose your business license, all former tenants will be officially informed of your activity, and you will face penalties from both the state of Georgia and possible legal action from any or all former tenants. Do you understand?
Pearl listened intently, his eyes wary.
Yes?
Are you prepared to provide all required related business records for the Plaza Inn and Suites?
In answer, he bent and collected the fat book that he'd brought in with him. He plopped it onto the edge of her desk. It was bound in fake burgundy leather, embossed in tarnished silver script, guest registry. Renee glanced from the book to Pearl.
All your records are handwritten?
If it isn't broke, don't fix it.
She reached and pulled the book toward her, flipped it open, paged through it. Each page was a dense list of lines and boxes headed with dates. There were spaces for names, addresses, car, make and model, nights spent, room number, cost, etc. Most pages were barely a third filled.
This is the total of your records?
Yes.
Pearl stirred restlessly, as if unwilling to let the book go.
But you won't need it unless some tapes are found with tenants on them. That's what you said, right?
Renee nodded, meeting his eyes.
That's correct.
Pearl sat back, seeming tentatively relieved. He sniffed and glanced around impatiently.
Can I go now?
Renee was happy to say yes. Fact 2. Vampires don't show up in mirrors. Now this one is kind of sort of true, but it's more about what not showing up in mirrors really means. In the old stories and myths, not having a reflection meant that a body didn't have a soul. And that part is true fact about vampires. No soul at all, long gone. Sure, they had souls back when they were regular people. But the people that they used to be are as dead as Abe Lincoln. A vampire is just a walking and talking, human-shaped supernatural force. Now that can have its upsides, though. A vampire only needs to be seen when they want to be. They can get in your head, plant ideas and thoughts, inspire trust or fear, manipulate urges, stoke desire. And we've adapted to the times as well. Nowadays, we can intercept and alter electromagnetic waves, absorb and transmit radio and television signals, even tap phone calls just by touching the wires. Being soulless creatures of the beyond comes with a whole laundry list of fringe benefits. Being immune to death, that's just one of them.
10 days after her interview with Amos Pearl, Renee Villefort had mostly forgotten about the cameras at the Plaza Inn and Suites. She was doing paperwork at her desk, drinking a tab and trying not to listen to Brad Chalmers hectoring a street punk going by the name BZB. The kid was kicked back in the visitor chair, his hat on sideways, clearly immune to Chalmers' tepid impression of a tough guy cop. Her desk phone rang, and she scooped it up without looking.
Detective Villefort.
Detective, this is Amos Pearl at the Plaza Inn. I need your help.
Renee didn't immediately register the name. Without looking up from her paperwork, she said,
I'm not an officer, sir. If you have something to report, I'll transfer you to dispatch.
No, listen. I don't need that kind of help. I don't need police help. I need protection.
Renee tapped her pen and looked up, finally recognizing the voice.
I'm not sure why you're calling me, Mr.
She paused and replayed the conversation so far.
Mr. Pearl, if you are in danger or experiencing a crime, you should call 911.
Shut up and listen for a minute. What I need help with isn't the sort of thing the cops can do anything about, even if they did believe me.
Renee finally put down her pen and leaned back in her chair.
You may have failed to realize this, Mr. Pearl, but I also happen to be a cop.
Did you notice the missing page?
Renee blinked.
The missing...
From the Plaza Inn guest registry, the missing page. Third week of May, 1985.
Renee sat up again. She remembered the guest registry now, the record of all the tenants at Pearl's motel for the past decade. The registry had been in the evidence locker for over a week. A search of Pearl's living quarters had turned up no illicit tapes. Still, the story of his hidden cameras had appeared in the Tribune police blotter. And then Channel 12 had followed up with a local news expose on Pearl and the Plaza Inn during last Friday's Eye on Augusta segment. Pearl hadn't yet returned to collect the registry, perhaps believing that she meant to question him about a conspicuously missing page from 2 years ago.
Yes,
she lied.
We noticed the missing page, sir.
Pearl seemed almost relieved.
Meet me tonight at the motel. Anytime, whenever you get off work, I don't care. I'm here all day. Just come over and don't tell anyone.
Mr. Pearl, it doesn't work that way. If you need assistance or have something to report, call the desk or come into the station. It's almost walking distance from the plaza.
Do you want to see the tape or not?
Renee paused, sat up straighter in her chair, held the phone closer to her ear.
No tapes were found, Mr. Pearl.
Of course not.
His voice was sneering.
There's only the one left. How hard do you think it is to hide one little videotape?
Quietly, Renee asked,
Are you offering me a confession over the phone, sir?
Pearl turned truculent.
I'm not offering you anything. I'm just saying, if you want to know why I turned off the cameras, then come over to the plaza tonight. Come alone. I don't need the cops. I just need somebody I can trust.
Renee frowned, bemused.
What makes you think you can trust me?
I don't know. You're just the only person I can think of. I took your number when I was there last week. I thought maybe I'd need it, and now I do. Will you come? Please? I really need you to see this. You won't be able to help me if you don't.
Renee didn't make any promises, but she knew she would accept Pearl's invitation that night. She was too curious not to. The Plaza Inn and Suites was a long, two-story stucco box lined with brown doors and unadorned windows, the lower half overhung by the top half's narrow balcony. Its neon sign buzzed over flaking painted letters, flanked by an angled arrow made of chasing lights, half of which were dead. Renee parked her unmarked Plymouth Duster and got out, taking in the joint with a look of vague disgust. Two other cars occupied the front lot. Probably more were sequestered around back, carefully beyond view. The sky was low and sluggish, heavy with dusk and the threat of rain. Pearl was in the office, behind a high desk, reading a paperback. He set it aside quickly when Renee entered, ringing an overhead bell.
Are you alone?
As alone as a single call to dispatch. What do you have to show me, Mr. Pearl?
Come on.
Pearl came out from behind the desk and led Renee through a nondescript door into what was obviously his living quarters. She hadn't been part of the evidence search, but had heard about the place from those who were. They had described it as cramped, cluttered, and stinking of mingled cigarette smoke and stale cooking. They hadn't been wrong. The first room was a kitchen, lit only by under-cabinet lighting, creating the sense of a museum exhibit of small appliances, grimy yellow counters, and boxes of Pop-Tarts and Hamburger Helper. After this was a sort of den whose floor and walls were both covered with horrendous green shag carpeting. A window air conditioner rattled away, creating a halo of chill within about a 5-foot radius. Pearl led on, moving quickly, not looking back. Beyond the den was a living room with stucco walls. A big screen projection TV stood by the door with an orange recliner parked in front of it. Renee had the sense that this room was a converted guest room, as evidenced by the tiny adjacent bathroom and a vestigial closet. Pearl stopped in a back corner alcove next to the closed closet door. Here, Renee saw a rolling chair and a desk cluttered with newspapers, coffee mugs, stacks of paperback books with their page edges dyed red or yellow, a box of Cheez-Its, and most prominently, a small television sitting atop a chunky gray VCR. The television was on, providing the only light, a haze of bluish static. Pearl stood next to the desk and turned to face Renee.
I'm admitting to nothing except that I recorded this because I didn't like the look of them. Two men, one older, the other one hardly out of his teens. Not related. I could tell that just by looking at them. The younger one was in a members-only jacket, chewing gum and popping it like some high school punk waiting outside the principal's office. The older one was dressed like a college professor on holiday. Polo shirt under a tweed blazer. Twinkle in his eye, like he was sharing a dirty secret with me the whole time. I know the type.
Renee met his gaze.
And what type is that?
Just the type,
he said, hedging a little, glancing back at the TV.
You know what I mean. The kid, I sort of recognized him. Not him in particular, but the look of him. He was the type you see hanging around Gordon Highway, around Lazuli's and the King's Club. The kids that offer a good time for a price.
Not that you'd know anything about that.
No, I sure wouldn't.
He looked back at her, his eyes wide and angry. Renee raised an eyebrow. He deflated a little and went on.
I can smell trouble when it comes walking in my lobby, that's all. So I put them in number 26, got a fresh tape, and hit record, just in case anything ugly happened.
Because number 26 has the best camera?
Pearl brushed a speck of lint from his vest.
Because 26 has cameras in both the bathroom and the bedroom area. It's a single king, balcony level, end room.
He picked up a remote control. It was plugged into the VCR by a length of gray cord. He glanced back at Renee.
It isn't very nice to watch,
he said.
I promise you, sir, I've seen worse.
Pearl nodded at this, as if merely acknowledging her response. Without looking away, he pressed the play button. The small television flickered. The static blipped away, replaced by a grainy black and white image, mostly dark, marked only by a trapezoidal shape on the upper left, a window, its curtains open, showing a section of balcony railing. Video tracking lines rippled over the image, distorting it and then resolved. Another bright shape appeared, far left, a rectangle of light, interrupted by two moving shapes, an opening door, painting a stripe of light across the floor, onto the large bed, reflecting on a framed picture. The room light turned on, flooding the scene with stark contrast. Two men moved into the room. One, the younger one, tossed his jacket onto the bed. The other moved to the window, looked out, twitched the curtains, but not closing them. There was no sound, but the two seemed to be talking comfortably. The younger one walked off screen, moving beneath the camera's view. The scene changed, flicking to a new image. This one showed the bathroom from a high, wide-angle view, distorting everything. The young man was standing over the toilet, thankfully mostly hidden from view. He was still talking, Renee saw. When he finished, he moved to the sink, rinsed his hands cursorily, then leaned to inspect his thick blonde hair, primping it deftly with one hand. He turned and headed back out. The view switched again. The young man walked into the bedroom and stopped. He seemed to be looking at the bed, which appeared strangely shiny. The older man was standing at its foot, arranging something over it. It was a clear plastic sheet, covering the bed from edge to edge. He looked up at the young man, said something, and smiled. The young man took a step closer, and the older man suddenly lanced out his arm, battened onto the younger man's collar, and pulled him forward. He pivoted, spun the younger man around, and threw him onto the bed with a show of ease and strength that was both teasing and threatening. The younger man seemed to laugh nervously. He tried to sit up on the bed, grabbed at a handful of the plastic covering, but the older man moved alongside the bed and pushed him down easily, planting one hand on his chest. With the other, he grabbed a fistful of the young man's hair right at the crown of the head and pulled. The man's head jerked back, revealing the strong pillar of his neck. The older man leaned over, opened his jaw, and bit down onto it. He did it like a starving man chomping into a cheeseburger, pulling back his lips and closing his teeth on the taut hose of the man's throat, pinching it, twisting his head until his teeth punched through the muscle and flesh, bursting the young man's neck with a spurt and gout of blood.
Oh my God,
Renee said thinly, taking a step back from the TV screen, raising a hand to her mouth. Pearl was still looking at her, as if he'd seen this bit 1,000 times and was bored of it by now. He watched her watch the screen, the blue flicker lighting her face, reflecting in her wide gaze. On the screen, the older man was bent over the bed, his mouth battened onto the young man's throat, his back arching and relaxing in a rhythmic motion. Apart from the initial burst of blood, little seeped out now. The older man was clearly drinking it. His cheeks seemed to fill then slack in time with the arch of his back. He swallowed, gulping avidly, keeping up with the flow, actively sucking it up. His fingers splayed on the young man's chest, curled into a claw, bunching his shirt. Speckles of blood ran along the wrinkles of the plastic sheet. The young man lolled weakly. His hands rose, pawed vaguely at the air, and then dropped back to the plastic sheet. Raised again, waved, dipped, then fell back. Within a minute, the young man stopped moving entirely. Of course he did. Even through the grainy TV image, Renee could see that he was dead, white as milk, drained of blood. The older man finally straightened, stepped back. His mouth was masked with blood. The body on the bed lay perfectly still, splayed like a starfish, the throat gaping open, black and glistening. But then the older man wiped his mouth with his hand, swayed on his feet for a moment as if drunk, then turned and walked out of view, entering the bathroom. The scene didn't switch to that view this time. Instead, it remained fixed on the dead man, unmoving on the plastic sheet. Blood spatters beaded and ran together, pooling slowly around the body. Renee couldn't look away. She shook her head slowly.
"Sir,"
she began, but Pearl shushed her harshly. He raised the remote and pushed another button. The image on the screen flickered. Tracking lines streamed over it as Pearl fast-forwarded, then hit play again. The older man was back in the scene again. He seemed to have cleaned himself up now. No blood showed on his hands or face. He glanced around the room, as if assuring he hadn't forgotten anything, then moved to the door, opened it, and flicked off the light. The scene darkened again to a mostly black screen, marked only by the trapezoid of the window and the rectangle of the open door. The older man stepped out. The door closed. A moment later, he passed across the window on the outside and walked out of view.
"Sir,"
Renee started again.
"This tape is evidence of a murder. I'm going to need to collect it immediately."
"Just wait,"
Pearl interrupted her, raising the remote again.
"Wait a minute and watch. It's not over."
He pushed the fast-forward button again. The view on screen distorted and flickered. Pearl looked at Renee and managed to appear sheepish.
"I was so shocked by the whole thing, I freaked out. I forgot to stop the recording."
Renee realized she was standing rigid, every muscle tensed. She forced herself to relax, but just a little.
"So you were watching as it happened?"
Pearl nodded reluctantly.
"I didn't always, but..."
Renee stepped forward again.
"I understand this might be very uncomfortable for you, Mr. Pearl, but this tape has to go into evidence. You'll need to provide the missing registry page so we can identify the victim or connect him to any John Doe's."
"Would you just shut up and watch?"
Pearl stopped fast-forwarding and put his finger on the play button. He clicked it, but nothing changed on the screen. Same window shape, same featureless dark room.
"I'm trying to tell you this wasn't a murder. I don't know what it was, but the man... he's not dead."
Renee frowned at him.
"Sir, I saw what you saw. Nobody survives having their throat ripped out. Look, you may have a vested interest in keeping your own secrets, but..."
On the screen, a dark figure suddenly rose into view, interrupting the regular shape of the window. The figure moved jerkily, rising once, falling back, then clambering upright again. It lurched and grabbed at one of the curtains, catching a handful, using them for leverage. In silhouette, the figure seemed to sway, to gather its bearings. Its hair stood up in a wild strew. It trembled, almost collapsed, and then straightened again. After a moment, it turned and stepped out of the view. Renee watched, dumbstruck.
Is that?
But then the figure lurched back across the window again. This time it seemed to be carrying something, a wadded, wrinkled mass clutched awkwardly in both arms. It passed the window. The door opened, casting its bar of light across the floor, up the bed, onto the framed picture. The shambling figure stepped out into the light, still hauling its wadded parcel. It was the plastic sheet from the bed, balled into a mass. The figure stood there, framed in the rectangle of the open door, swaying on unsteady legs. Then the door shut. The room went dark. The figure lurched past the window, overlit and anonymous, and then it was gone. Pearl stopped the tape. Static filled the screen again. With a mechanical whine and clatter, the VCR spat out the tape like a rectangular black tongue. Softly, Renee said,
"That was the older tenant. Had to be. He came back, right?"
"No."
Pearl shook his head.
"I've rewatched that video 100 times. The older man gets up from the attack, washes his face and hands in the bathroom all fussy-like. Then he turns off the light and he leaves. He never comes back. The door never opens again. If it did, we'd see the light from the outside. There's a security light right there in the corner, right next to the stairs. 40 minutes after the older man leaves, the dead one gets up. The victim gets up and leaves all by himself."
"That can't be."
Renee laughed a little hollowly.
"That just can't be what happened. There's another explanation. Rewind it again."
"It doesn't matter how many times I rewind it, Detective. The morning after it happened, around 11:30, I finally got up the nerve to go check the room. You know what I found? Nothing. No plastic sheet on the bed. No drops of blood. Not so much as a footprint on the bathroom linoleum. The room looked like it hadn't even been rented. That means that not only did the dead kid get up and walk out all by himself, he took the bloody plastic sheet with him."
Renee mentally replayed what she had seen and shook her head.
"It can't be what it looks like. It has to be a trick or a prank. It's not like getting shot. People can survive getting shot or even stabbed, but not..."
Pearl glared at her, then turned to the VCR. He plucked out the videotape and held it up, brandishing it at her.
"You have to know what we just looked at, Detective Villefort. You have to have figured it out. I mean, tell me you have. You've seen the same movies I have."
Renee blinked and frowned at him.
"I don't know what you're talking about."
"Only one thing attacks by sucking up blood, but doesn't kill because it turns the victim into a monster just like itself."
Renee's frown turned momentarily confused and then incredulous.
"You can't be serious."
"Don't you think I've already tried to imagine some other explanation?"
Pearl said, waving the videotape again.
"Any other explanation? I've watched this video so many times, the tape's wearing out. I'm surprised it even played tonight, and that's the last time it ever will be played. I should have destroyed it the night I recorded it. If I had, then maybe none of this would have happened."
With that, he lowered the videotape to the edge of the desk, gripped both ends in his hands, and pushed. The tape bent and cracked over the edge of the desk, breaking in half.
"What are you doing?"
"There's nothing I want more than to believe I didn't see this."
Pearl turned back to her, pulling the videotape apart in his hands. Black tape stretched between the pieces like disemboweled guts.
"I don't want to believe what happened on this tape, but it did happen. It did, and that's why I stopped looking at the feeds from my rooms. I don't ever want to see anything like that again. Over the last 2 years, I had finally pushed it out of my mind. But then that damn dirty Demetria White snitched on me. Word got out, no thanks to you and the blabbermouth news people on Channel 12. Word got out about the cameras at the Plaza Inn. And then yesterday..."
He paused, slumped a little, leaned back against the desk and lowered the broken tape in his hands.
"Yesterday, I got the call."
Renee observed him tensely, angry, but grudgingly curious.
"What call?"
A minute later, they were back in the front office, standing behind the desk. On a shelf behind the desk, a yellow push-button telephone was plugged into an answering machine. Pearl pushed a large red button, and the machine emitted a beep. A recorded voice spoke through a film of static.
Greetings, Mr. Pearl. My name is Trey Fiore. A few years back, I had the pleasure of staying at your establishment, and I have never forgotten your singular hospitality. I'll be coming through Augusta on Saturday the 20th and require a one-night reservation. I'm confident you can spare a room, so there's no need for a return call. I'll be traveling and away from my phone anyway. It will be a pleasure to see you again, Amos.
The recording stopped with another click and beep. Renee asked,
Do you recognize the name Trey Fiore?
Pearl nodded.
I assume it's the older gentleman, the college professor on holiday?
No.
Pearl ran a hand through his thinning black hair.
His was the name in the registry. Connor Drayton, Boston, Massachusetts, Brown Dotson, license plate TRR1715. Trey was the younger one, the local kid. The older guy introduced him to me, full name, as if the kid was about to get his high school diploma or something. I remembered it because it seemed so weird, almost like the older guy wanted me to remember. Trey Fiore, that was the kid that got killed on camera. The one that got his throat ripped out, his blood sucked out, and then got up and walked away on his own. And now he's coming back. He's coming back because he knows what I saw.
Renee tapped the answering machine.
Somebody is playing games with you, Mr. Pearl. Fiore is obviously dead. It's far more likely that it's the older man. Drayton, you say? If your camera recorded him committing a murder...
Then that's even worse!
Pearl exclaimed, growing agitated.
Why do you think I burned his page in the registry? The last thing I wanted was for the word to get out that I might have seen what happened in room 26 that night. The last thing I wanted was for some supernatural undead killer to come hunting for me because I know his secret. But now Channel 12 blabbed it, words got out, and he's after me. He's gonna come find me and do to me what he did to that poor stupid kid.
I...
Renee scoffed a little, shook her head.
You have to protect me. You're trained for this sort of thing.
Renee nearly laughed, not because it was funny, but because it was absurd.
You think police academy training included confronting vampires?
You're trained to serve and protect from whatever, from anything.
He glared at her, challenged her with his eyes.
I demand that you protect me from whoever made that call, at least until this weekend is over and the threat is past. Put some silver bullets in your service revolver. I don't know, just protect me.
Renee turned, walked out from behind the desk.
I'm pretty sure silver bullets are for werewolves.
Don't you make fun of me,
Pearl cried, following her toward the door.
You saw what was on that tape. You can't let that happen to me. You can't let that monster kill me just because I know his secret.
And why not?
Renee turned back to him at the door, her hand on the push lever.
I'm not a beat cop or a bodyguard. I'm a detective. Detectives are about solving murders, not preventing them.
You need to protect me, Detective Villefort,
Pearl said in a lower voice, as if playing his trump card.
Because whoever made that call, whatever he is, now you know his secret too. If you don't protect me and kill this monster, then I'll make sure he knows that I showed you that tape before I destroyed it. If you don't protect me, then he'll be coming after you next.
This has been part one of Blood Drive, a Gray Line three-part series. Listen to part two to discover if Amos Pearl has indeed infected Renee Villefort with his curse, and what, if anything, they can do to escape it. The Gray Line is written and produced by me, G. Norman Lippert. Blood Drive features the voice talents of Jeannie Lynn as Renee Villefort, and myself as Amos Pearl and sundry other characters. If you are enjoying our treks along the forgotten back roads of the beyond, do hit subscribe, give us a rating and review, and as always, tell all of your friends and a few choice enemies.